You're listening to CPC Together, a podcast produced by Central Peninsula Church in the San Francisco Bay Area, where we talk about pretty much everything.
It's okay. It's okay if you crunch.
No, it's okay if you crunch Cheez-Its into the microphone because I can just delete that bit of audio.
He has a Cheez-It plugin.
I do. Yeah.
That it removes only
it removes the frequency of Cheez-Its. If we were using Adobe Audition, I think is their audio tool. They have like this fancy AI stuff where it can learn what a sound is and then sweep the entire file and delete it
wherever it finds it. Brandon's voice every time he talks.
I could probably pick out a word that Brandon says.
None of
mine
talk like this.
Yeah. Every week, Brandon has to use a different voice just to fend off the AI.
Guys, we have to introduce someone here because our people have mentioned now to us that they don't know the mysterious voice in the room. We've added a fourth. And
just wandered in. We don't even know who he is.
We're calling him Nico.
Which stands for?
Well, each not
give an adjective.
Not introduced. Co-operator. His name also
happens
weirdly.
To be. It happens to be. It matches the acronym.
Yeah, it's Nico, which is so odd. I don't know how that happens. You know, that's one of those beautiful things.
It's the magic of Hollywood
that God has created. Done.
Let's take a moment. Just to another bit of God's beauty. Yeah.
Anyway, so
a beautiful coincidence.
Nico is part of this room. He's actually editing the podcast now. And Rachel, I'm wondering if maybe you could introduce Nico for us. Just kind of give a summation of who he is and his character and his life story a little bit. Just in like a rough, like a 30-second.
Facts about Nico. I will start.
Great vocabulary.
Great vocabulary. That's a good choice. Okay, I'll go second then.
That's high praise coming from Kevin or Rachel.
His watch is in military time, so I feel like that tells you something about him. Am I accurate on that?
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. That's a personality tidbit.
I was part of a military youth organization.
Okay.
Almost brainwashed by Washington, D.C. Not quite.
Brainwashed. He always dresses to the nines.
He does.
Yeah.
Always a good dresser.
He does.
Snazzy dresser.
You've seen him around church. He's usually behind the soundboard.
Mixing the dials.
But yeah, he's the usually the best dressed guy in the room. Kind of looks like the guy from Top Gun, Young Goose.
Young Goose. Oh my gosh.
Especially with the stash. He's got a really good stash going.
I'm never gonna look at Nico the same.
It's
Can
funny
we call
it's
you
funny
Young
that...
Goose? That's a good nickname.
You
we
could,
got chili
yes.
beef. We I, got Young I, Goose.
We got
that.
Burger Boy.
So
Burger Boy. I'll tell you something funny. It's funny that you mentioned that. It's even funnier that Kevin never caught that because I remember
so
getting
good.
Into the bus going to the student ministry camp.
Yeah.
None of these kids knew my name. But every single one of them was like, hey, you kind of look like Goose. Can I call you Goose? I'm just going to call you Goose.
That's so funny. I'd never seen that.
You could be a movie star, Nico. Have you ever thought about that?
Yes. Hollywood's a godless place. I don't have any interest.
Makes thoughtful observations.
Yeah.
Well thought out.
Oh, man. So, Nico, I thought...
Speaking as of your, off the rails.
I thought as your initiation, maybe you could start... by, as Kevin talked about, you know, beautiful moments that, you know, stop. He, I think he even asked us, right? What do you say? What is the last time something beautiful kind of stopped you in your tracks?
Yes. Or prompted you to action.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So sure. here's the thing. What is the beautiful moment, maybe most recent? And then what was your response?
Any of you get a look at the sky yesterday around 7, 8 o'clock?
It was pink hour.
It was a pink
beautiful.
Hour. It was
Plus
a little cloudy.
Rainbow.
It was a little red. There was a rainbow. And then it just rained out of nowhere.
So weird. Yeah, it was so weird.
That was fantastic. So I just stopped by Safeway, driving to a friend's house. I've got 2 gallons of ice cream in my car. No way to keep them cold. I get to my friend's house. They're pulling into the driveway and they say, Nico, turn around. We're going up to CSM. to see the sunset.
Nice.
So that both prompted me to stop
and eat our cookies and cream ice cream.
Pretty much. Nice. Stop where I was, prompted me to then turn around, drive up to CSM, and just stare at the sunset for 5-10 minutes.
Nice.
And then get rained on.
Nice. It was wild. It was a beautiful,
I think that
a beautiful sunset.
Bay Area sunsets are the most beautiful thing. We get some of the most unique cloud formation out of anywhere else in the country.
Yeah.
That combined with the coastal weather.
Is it
and
like
the mountains.
Cumulonimbus or?
Oh, we get everything. We get high altitude, mid altitude, low altitude.
Talking cloud formation here.
Cirrus.
What did you just
say? Cumulonimbus, normal nimbus.
What is going on right now with this?
They put on our graduation degrees.
Yeah. He's like closet
meteorologist. You graduated cumulonimbus?
Yeah. Completely nothing in my brain. Just
clouds. Jokes aside, the cumulonimbus is like the classic.
The joke is not aside. It is right in front of us, my friend. It is here.
It is the classic thunderstorm cloud. Oh, like when you see one of those big puffy clouds that turns into an anvil and you know there's about to be a massive storm. That's
I didn't know that's how it worked. Classic
cumulonimbus. Yeah.
The normal
puffy ones. I'm from the North Peninsula, man. The only formations we have is fog. Yeah. That's all we get.
The normal puffy ones that make shapes and whatever are probably just nimbus clouds. Those are pretty harmless. They just make shade. And then all the really high ones that look streaky and thin are cirrus. Yeah,
look at this cloud knowledge. That is more that I have heard. Like, if you were to add up all the information I know about clouds from my entire life,
that's it.
The last minute is more than I had known in my whole life.
I just thought of like a new segment that we could have in this podcast. Like, we'll have a little jingle, a little jingle that's like, "Life According to Nico," and then Nico goes on a rant about some random thing that he's done. Like,
what is it? The cloudiest nimbus, or what? What is it called?
Cumulonimbus.
Cumulonimbus. C-U-M-U.
Where did you guys hear this term? That you
biology.
Oh man, I did not pay attention.
No, not biology. No. What's the study of the Earth? Geography.
Geology or meteorology? Geology.
I think I learned it just in regular old...
I have a feeling whatever it is, all of us should probably go back and learn more, because that was rough, guys, trying to figure that out.
I read it in a book a long time ago, and...
Anyway, that's really... that's super inspiring, Nico, what you just said.
Yeah.
Rachel, how about your moment? Your beautiful moment.
Probably at Sequoia last year with my sister. It was really pretty.
Oh.
We just watched... Also sunset, but we just sat there in pure silence, which is new for us. My sister doesn't always like silence, and usually we're listening to something or talking about something, but we just sat, watched the sunset, and saw some large rock formations, and it was beautiful.
Sequoia National Forest.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty
good.
Did
you see General Sherman?
We did. Very impressive.
The general.
Yeah.
That is good.
Everything's so big there.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is beautiful.
Do you want me to go or do you want to go?
Mine's not nearly as profound. I'm a sucker. I don't know why this came to mind, actually, when you asked this question. I'm a sucker to showing up to a baseball game way too early and watching them like spray down the field, spray down the infield and get the field already. I love it. I love it. And so you come up kind of the entrance off William Mays Plaza at Oracle Park. You come in right behind home plate, and it's just like the field's perfectly pristine and green. The lines are crisp, and then they're spraying the infield down. It's beautiful.
I'm hearing a French horn right now.
I don't know why you're hearing that. It's weird.
Like, you know, that majestic thing where someone's walk in like, that would be well, kid, thing. Today's the day. Mm-hmm. You think you got it in you?
It's one of those oddly satisfying things.
Gee, Flash Jack,
isn't it?
I hope I can do it.
Because it just turns that perfect color of brown as they're making their way across. Like,
it's like those power washing videos on TikTok.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Oh, man, you're missing out.
I've watched the only TikTok video I've ever seen is one that's like imported over to Instagram. You know what I mean? Like how like there's Instagram of TikTok videos or something. But
the reels.
I'm not on the TikTok. Not on it.
It's just a sped up footage of a guy power washing somebody's sidewalk. It's awesome.
Super satisfying.
It is cathartic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine was maybe one of the recent ones, although I was just in Mexico, which was beautiful. There was a lot of moments where that was beautiful. There were some crazy thunderstorms. I used to live in the Midwest, and you would get crazy thunderstorms in Iowa too. Did you get thunderstorms when you were in Pittsburgh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You just don't get those out here. Like where you see these big old huge cracks of where you see the big old huge lightning and the big cracks of thunder. That was really cool and kind of like majestic.
Yeah. Mm.
But the last time I can remember like seeing something beautiful and just responding is I was at what's the camp that we went to for the youth? The youth
camp Koinonia.
Koinonia
or Koinonia?
Koinonia.
Koinonia. From the Greek word.
Koinonia.
I know it's Greek, Kevin. Thank you.
Life according to Kevin. All right, tell us the Greek, Kevin.
How does the word? How does that word in Greek break down?
Koi, like the fish. That's all I got.
That's all I got.
Anyway, so
you were in a moment there, and we broke that moment for you. I'm sorry.
I got called to. Someone wanted me to go down to the creek or something like that, and I was like, I don't want to go down the dumb creek. But I had to because Nico was nowhere around and I couldn't make him go. And so I went with these two guys down to the creek and they're like just doing whatever junior high kids do at
do
a creek.
At a creek. You know,
throwing rocks and attempting to destroy stuff.
Pollywogs at each other.
And so they kind of wandered up and I was down by this little waterfall and it was so... the sound of it actually.
Yeah, that's a good sound. Mm.
And so my response was to put my phone down on voice memo. And record it.
You sampled a waterfall?
I sampled it so that I could go to sleep to it.
And so you can play it right now for us?
Do you want to hear it?
Yeah.
Yes. You can't just tease us.
ASMR Babbling Brook is what I call it.
Babbling Brook.
Babbling. That's pretty good.
That's nice.
Yeah. Does that make you want to go to the bathroom a little bit?
I didn't want
to
say it, but...
Honestly, no. Or just go to sleep. Sometimes I go to sleep to that.
So, like, white noise?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, when are we going to walk around the Santa Cruz Mountains with a boom microphone and a recorder just grabbing nature sounds to
I'm
fall
ready.
Asleep to?
All right. I'm ready.
Awesome.
But it wasn't the look. So beauty can be in audio, too, right? It doesn't just have to be what you see.
I feel like that's a weighted question for the musician. In the room for me to say yes or no to that.
No, I think that beauty is this powerful thing in our world. It's kind of, in some ways, that when I think about it, you got me thinking about how it's in many ways, it's like kind of the driver, this pursuit of beauty. It's the thing that, as a songwriter, like I'm constantly in search of moments that inspire me to beauty and that kind of thing. And it really is a powerful thing in our world. And you kind of, towards the beginning of your message, Kevin, you talked about this article, and I'm wondering if you could unpack a little bit where it talks about the power of
Do you beauty. Think it's the driver in the modern world? Like, what do you...
For me, I will tell you, that's maybe this is just...
Because I don't think it is.
Personally. So me trying to... capture moments of beauty and make that's kind of been like the thing that has plagued me in my life, for better or for worse. When I encounter something beautiful, I want to harness it and I want to create, I want that to be like my whole life always. And so I think that's kind of maybe the curse of the artist. And so maybe this isn't,
I was going to say, I think you have more unique lens as an artist than maybe others. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I ever would have thought beauty drives the world. At least
it probably doesn't drive the world.
But should it? Maybe is a different question.
I don't mean, but it certainly drives me. Does it drive you guys? What else would drive you if beauty doesn't?
Us personally, or do we think speaking in more general terms?
Either, I don't care.
Well, I think
in general terms, just personally, that's a very, very difficult question for me to answer. I've been on this earth 24 years, and I cannot tell you what gets me up in the morning with any certainty.
That might sound terrible.
Life according to Nico.
But there's a sense in which I'm still trying to figure that out.
But you do want to get up in the morning, right, Nico?
Yeah. For some reason.
But just, I mean, I don't know. This super cynical Monday morning take, but I think economic output drives the world way more than beauty, whether it should.
is a different question. But I just think the quest for more, to consume more, to achieve more, like, I don't know, to me that feels like it drives the world far more.
Mm-hmm. That's the tension.
The beauty.
And here's where, like, here I can remember baby Brandon being slapped in the face by the world. Like, I remember when I understood that this isn't, like, where my head lives is not where the world. Like, at some point you have to, like, get serious about life and achieve and accomplish things.
Yeah.
And you can't just be, even when you tell people, I want to be an artist, like, that's what I want to do. It's getting de-emphasized more and more in culture.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
People's like, it's not an endeavor that means anything to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah.
Well, I wonder if we had, like, I wonder if there's a connection. Like, do we have the attention span for beauty? You know what I mean? Like, I just think of, like, do we have the, like, because beauty is one of those, like, as you were saying earlier, Rachel, like, you had to sit there in silence and watch nature pass by. You had to go up to CSM to sit there for 10 minutes to watch the sunset. Like, those in some ways, I think we all know that there's an intrinsic value to beauty. I don't think people would say there isn't. But do we have the attention span to create good, beautiful things?
Yeah.
I think so.
I don't know.
Because
you're more optimistic than me.
If the ultimate goal, generally speaking, for the entire world is to consume as many pleasurable things as possible, beauty is one of those things. And I think people will go out of their way to consume and focus on consuming something that they find beautiful, even if the reasons are purely selfish or otherwise driven by worldly desires.
So low-hanging, easy, easily accessible beauty that is right here in your face. But so much beauty, you have to stick with it a little bit. Yeah. Like, here's
cheap
something.
Thrills. Yeah, versus, like, profound beauty. Yeah,
I actually sometimes, this is so, you guys are going to judge me so hard for this. Probably. I sometimes pay my children to listen to a song.
Is it your song?
No. Because I want them to hear the beauty in the song. And I know even if I just pay them to listen to it, it's not enough. They have to listen to it and then they have to tell me what the song is about.
Mm.
And I'll give them a couple dollars to do that.
That is one of the most Brandon things I've heard in a very long time.
But I think going back, Nico, to what you were saying, like,
no comment on that, Kevin?
All right. Yeah, it's weird. But, well, what's the song, actually?
What's
the last
done
song you paid
multiple
somebody?
Times?
Because you could pay me, and I'll probably listen to a few songs for you, too.
Really?
Yeah, if you paid me, I'd listen to songs.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
The last one was If You Get There Before I Do. It's a super sad country song. It starts off with these two little kids and they're supposed to meet. It's like this romantic, like, these two little kids, they're going to meet by the tree. And so he leaves this note by the tree that says, "Hey, if you get here before I do, don't give up on me. I'll be there when my chores are through. I don't know how long I'll be." And then it goes through their lives. Oh, and at the very end, he gives this little note to his wife before he dies. So sad. It's better than that, but
wow.
And so I made Olivia
just
listen,
like,
to
that. I just think about you driving down the freeway and, like,
crying,
sobbing? Yeah,
having to pull over because you're listening to this country song.
That has for sure happened.
Wow. Yeah,
where I just pull over and start crying. But that's, like, I live for that.
Yeah,
and literally, that's, like, my favorite thing in the world. Getting a little teary eyed thinking about it.
Yeah, but I was just thinking of the difference between, like, yes, we live for a pleasurable experience, right? Like, that's where we default. But that can be satiated in, like, a thousand different ways, right? You could do that in a cheap way.
Yes.
That satisfies quicker or a more profound, kind of deeper. And it's a little bit of that strongest, deepest desire discussion we've had before.
I get the sense that most people can identify, if they were to compare A and B, cheap beauty versus profound beauty, beauty that had time and thought and energy and whatever else put into it, versus something that was made purely to be consumed as quickly and as economically as possible.
I wonder if the difference is entertainment and beauty.
I think there's I think there is a difference, but even I think the same can be said for both, because there's also there's cheap entertainment, there's cheap beauty, there's more expensive, more thoughtful entertainment.
Yeah.
And also more thoughtful beauty. I think you can argue that some of that distinction is starting to blur, or that people are being trained to accept cheaper alternatives as acceptable, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. I think of it in like the book world, because that's where my brain goes, and I just think of the difference between like a cheap mystery novel that's entertaining, right, like super fun, versus like a classic novel that throughout the centuries has been held up as like a work of art kind of thing.
Yeah, like Silence.
The Maze Runner, like, the Maze Runner versus Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like I rarely have the like bandwidth to dig into some of those like classic.
Have you read that before, though? Silence by
who's it by, Brandon?
Martin Scorsese.
That's the one who directed the film.
Dang it.
Chisako Endo is the one who wrote that book. But you just want to push it over. Right? But anyway, I just wonder. I wonder if there's a connection between our diminishing attention span and our ability to perceive beauty.
Well, I guess beauty almost has certainly to be appreciated slowly. Unless it's just something that you want to like.
She's not even remotely talking to Mark. Oh,
gosh. Well, you know what?
But yes, I think it does. It does have. It's the difference between. You know, like we were just in DC not too long ago, and so we were walking through all sorts of museums and whatnot that are out there. And there's two ways you can walk through a museum, right? One that I did with my daughters, which was like walk relatively quick and take a few glances at everything you look at along the way. Or there's those who I imagine understand like art and painting and those sorts of things, where they sit and they ponder, they look at the brush strokes, they get up close to it, they see it, all the different nuances to it. Like both are an experience of beauty. But one is probably a little bit more profound than like, how quick can I get from this side of the museum to the other side of the museum? You know, like we all kind of sense that that's cheaper.
Mm. Yeah, one is like savoring it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which I think comes down to how much time you have.
Probably.
If you set aside 4 hours to spend in a museum, you can bet you're going to appreciate.
But I think that's my exact point, is in the modern world, we don't have enough time.
Yeah.
We have to give ourselves
enough time.
We
have to go produce something.
Yeah, we got to go make something, you know?
There's so much more to consume. Why would we spend an hour inside of this massive art museum?
So clearly you've struck a nerve, Kevin.
Yeah.
But to go into the story, this woman comes in. She has this bottle of Nard that is worth a year's salary.
Well, the story starts, and we can't forget this because Mark does this intentionally. It starts with the ugliness, right? It starts with the chief priests and the scribes, religious leaders we've been tracking with for some time now, plotting to kill Jesus, and now kind of point blank, let's kill him, but let's do it secretly to not incite a riot. Because again, that's the way Mark is trying to set this up, to see, again, think of that image of the sandwich, right? There, it's sandwiched with that story and Judas's betrayal as kind of the darkness, but then this beautiful image of the woman in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And so he's contrasting those two things, which I tried to draw out the themes of how the chief priests and the scribes and Judas both turned Jesus into a utility. It was something that they could consume to get something else. Whereas this woman just saw the beauty of Jesus as who Jesus is, and responded with this like lavish act of worship. So you have to kind of, you know, Mark is intentionally wanting this section to be contrasted with those two narratives going on. So anyway.
Classic Mark.
Classic Markian intercalation.
So you said this, Kevin, but like our response would probably be similar to the other people's response to this woman dumping out a year's salary. I mean, even as you were talking, and I know the kind of the point of where you're going with this story, I'm thinking, did she really have to like break open the bottle and use the whole thing?
Dump
like,
the whole thing. I love the way you broke that down.
Yeah.
It was like, it wasn't just broken for dramatic effect.
Yeah.
Like it was broken intentionally for the purpose of using all of it at once.
All of it at once. There was no going back after that point. Like, she had made
the whole family heirloom thing, and just the sheer cost that drove it home. And this act was kind of insane by our standards.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think there is that sense of, you know, the indignancy in which people respond to that. I think just it so resonated with me, because I'm like, you know, you almost want to be upset with the response. Couldn't that have been given to the poor? Because, like, you almost know that they're the bad guys in the story, right? But like, as I just sat with the text, like, over and over, I'm like, I don't think I can really get upset with that. I think that's exactly how I would respond. Like, that is a waste. We should have given that to the poor. There are homeless to be fed. There are kids who need whatever, you know, like, and so there's a sense that, like, again, this is the brilliance of Mark, is we saw ourselves in that response. And I think the modern world too, even maybe even more acutely, we feel that visceral response, like, what a waste. And I think it gets back again to this idea of, like, do we have an appetite for beauty? I don't know if we do, because we're just in a, we live in a functional age and a pragmatic age that just wants to mechanize everything for some other end. And that, you know, those that were there, which I assume were the 12, the text doesn't necessarily say, but I would assume the 12 disciples are there, Judas included, watch this and just become indignant. Which is just kind of wild. You know, I don't know. Like, how would you guys respond?
Maybe that moment? We spend more time reacting to beauty, but not really appreciating it. Like, as a topic of conversation or even something to sell. But yeah, I think when we read ourselves, or when I read myself into that passage, and it's like, thinking through, she could have used that for other purposes. That was humbling, I think, because I would have wanted to be on the other side of it, but it's hard to, I think it's hard to reconcile both, because Jesus does care about the poor, but then he also appreciated her act of worship.
And that's certainly not, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's where I've seen that, you know, Jesus' response, the poor you'll always have with you. I've seen that used, I don't know if you guys have, but I've seen that used to justify kind of complacency towards doing the work of justice, which if you spent any time with Jesus at all, you'll know that that isn't the impulse, particularly that quote that he's drawing from Deuteronomy 15, where it's this whole section on economic justice that Israel was supposed to stand by. So, like, that's clearly not the point. But, like, how we understand that nuance is really difficult. And obviously they didn't get it. And I don't even think I know necessarily where the line is, right? Of, like, when is lavish worship? When is, you know, doing that for our own purpose versus, like, you know, caring for the poor, the marginalized or whatnot. Like, that's it's a weird line. I don't know what that distinction is.
Just knowing my own heart, the same feeling that I get when I think, could she have just used a little drop from the bottle?
Yeah.
Is the same feeling that I get when I think about surrendering everything to Jesus. Like, it's in me saying, I don't know if I want to give everything. Like, that's just too, it's just,
what about if I just gave a little bit?
Is that necessary? That really necessary? And she, this woman, the, you know, the beauty of it is that she, it seemed almost, I mean, it kind of translated maybe as careless. Like, I just don't have any value for this. But the truth is that she had just the utmost value in Jesus. And that's kind of your whole point here.
I wonder if it gets back to what we view at, like you were just saying, like what we view as valuable. Like, I'm thinking of the way our modern lens reads this text or Jesus' parable, which I reference all the time, about the treasure hidden in a field. Right, man comes across this treasure in the field, sells everything he has to gain that, to buy the field so he can have the treasure. Like, we read that and we think of, wow, what a sacrifice. But I don't think that man thought of it as a sacrifice. He was like, I'll do whatever I can because that's the real treasure, right? Like, we read it from the lens of we're losing something, not like, look what we just found. You know, and in some ways, I imagine that's what's going on with this woman. Like, we read it as, what a waste. She had to give up a year's salary to get Jesus. Like, I don't know if I'm ready for that commitment. But in that moment, it's not really about a commitment. It was about her, in some ways, natural response to the beauty of what Jesus deserved, or how we respond to something that profound, right? Like you know, in some ways, going back, Nico, to your example of the last, you know, last night, you saw the sunset and you wasn't like, I got to go put the ice cream away before I can go experience. It was like, I'm turning to go to the CSM because this is, I just want to experience this. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, it was the natural gut reaction. But we tend to, again, read it through the lens of sacrifice, laying down my life. And maybe that's just the wrong way to approach it. Like, it's more about, like, you know, the treasure in the field is much more about what was found than what was given up. And we read about what we had to give up to get it. And I think that's just not the intent of the parable.
That's good.
Yeah.
So that still places us as the focal point rather than the treasure itself. Yep.
Great point. Yeah.
I have a third point of view on this story, because I actually got hung up on the fact that she broke the jar.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a sucker for heritage and just the nostalgic aspect of things that have been in a family or in a space for a really long time.
Yeah.
And so in some ways I'm like, yeah, I would have been confused if she had poured all the perfume on Jesus. I probably would have questioned her motives as well.
Yeah.
But I think I would have been more upset over the fact that she took this family heirloom.
Yeah.
Smashed the top off on the nearest table.
Yeah.
And then dumped all the perfume on Jesus and be like, the jar.
Yeah. And it should be noted, by the way, that that is somewhat speculation that was an heirloom. The text does not say it was a family heirloom, but some of the scholars were just referencing like alabaster as a rare quality, the value of it altogether. Like it seems to signify.
Like that's a perfectly good, nice looking, expensive jar. Yeah, yeah. You could have just sat there and shaken it all out.
Yeah. The point remains, but just to ensure the clarity, like it is believed it could have been that heirloom, which does bring though a different layer to it again, the same sort of dimension, like likely was something passed on from generations. And so it is that there's all sorts of social norms that she's breaking, right? To do this lavish act of worship.
So you asked us kind of a haunting question, Kevin, and you kind of kept coming back to this, but is he beautiful or is he just
useful?
Yeah. Help us understand, maybe to give us some handles on this idea of like how could Jesus become a utility to us in the modern age? Like, how do you see this right now?
Yeah. I think it gets back to, we focus a lot on our relationship with Jesus for what he can get us. And we miss that the point of Jesus, following Jesus, is to follow Jesus, is to get Jesus, right? Like to be in connection to him. And so we can, like what I was trying to draw out, the chief priests and Judas use Jesus for a different end. And so I when we think about the ways in the modern world, we can then use Jesus, whether that's to satiate a guilty conscience, whether that's to stamp our get out of hell card, whether that's to, it's kind of strange in our culture, but like to get prestige or like social status, like it's a little not as much of an issue opposite in the Bay Area. but there are those spaces where it's like, you know, it could be revered as that. And so we often fall more in love with the benefits of Jesus than I think we do Jesus himself. And that's, I think, the haunting question, is if we come to Jesus just to go to heaven or to get out of hell, do we really love Jesus? Like, and in some ways that might have been C.S. Lewis somewhere, right, wrote the idea of like, when you get to heaven, if you don't love Jesus, is spending eternity with him really heaven? You know what I mean? Which is kind of a haunting question. Like, if you're after it just to escape some sort of punishment or whatnot, like, what are you going to spend eternity doing? You know what I mean? Besides spending, you know, your living moments
hanging out with my buddies.
Yeah.
Drinking whatever version of beer heaven has.
But it just becomes a really haunting question because it's like it appears that's what this woman understood, is that Jesus was in fact the thing. Yeah. And that's what she was after.
That brings out a memory I have of, I don't know, it's probably when I was lifeguarding, because I had a lot of time to sit on a chair and just do nothing but think.
Hopefully save children, too.
I'd never had to save a child. It was a thing. I had to save one adult in 6 years of lifeguarding, but that's beside the point.
It's more adults than I've saved in 6 years of that.
It was basically the question I asked myself of, if heaven involves eternal worship of God, is that what I desire? Or am I thinking of heaven as an eternal pleasure palace?
Mm,
yeah. where I get to spend my time in eternal sunshine, never getting tired or sick, and being able to explore the boundless universe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When in reality, we will be living our lives as worship to God.
Yeah. In a world made new and all that. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. so there's a beauty to that. You know, Rachel, you mentioned before we hit record, you just read The Great Divorce. Mm-hmm. And in that book by Lewis, he goes kind of character by character detailing the reasons in which people come to God. Mm. And, you know, much of his point, not his entire point, but much of his point is how often we use God to get other things. And it's just, I don't know. Like I think about that in the relationship I have, like with my girls, right? Like what I love when I get home from work and they just want to spend time with me, mm-hmm. right? They don't want to ask me about what's for dinner or did you pick up dessert on the way home or can we do this or that? Like those are great. I genuinely at times enjoy those things and obviously want to, you know, give those to my daughters when it's appropriate and all that. And mm-hmm. so like, it's not that it's inherently evil by any stretch, but it certainly hits my heart different when they're just like, you know, when Adley just wants to run and jump into my arms and just give me a hug or something. Like, that's a different experience. And I think, again, we often approach our relationship with Jesus in that way, where it's like, Jesus, it's so good to be here with you, but what can you get me? You know what I mean? I got this thing. Can you take care of that? Can you do this? And we miss the just simple, the goal is being in the presence of Jesus. And that's the treasure. That's the goodness, mm-hmm. you know?
I think this is some of the risk that we have to manage sometimes when we gather for church services, because sometimes I think people can fall in love with the,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
what the church service gives them or
the
what they're,
the emotion,
yeah, the, yeah. yeah, that whole thing, you know, mm-hmm. it can draw you in that way and you get, we kind of just tend to do that with things. Like mm-hmm. we just mm-hmm. take stuff that was never meant for our yeah. glorification. In fact, that article that I was going to have you reference 2 hours ago was, that's what she talks about, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I wonder if that's exacerbated by the fact that the world is now kind of hyper-focused on the concept of mental health. And I feel like some churches, especially newer ones, have kind of latched onto that as the goal. This church and the fellowship and the worship and the preaching is designed to get you into a better place mentally, and the way to that happens to be belief in following Jesus. Not that it's a bad thing to focus on, but I wonder yeah. if that has permeated the church in a way that is harmful.
But it is part of, like, when I think of the word salvation, it's from the Greek word sozo, which just literally means healing. Mm. Like, there is a part in which, as an integrated whole being, that's part of the work Jesus does with us. So it's not that it's adjacent to that, but it's that Jesus is quite literally, like, bringing our soul, which again, the soul is the collection of every part of us. So don't think of the immaterial part. It's the material and the immaterial. So the soul going through this process of healing, that is very much part of our relationship with Jesus.
Yeah.
I think what you're getting at is, like, do we come to Jesus just to be made whole? Yes. Like, that's not necessarily a bad thing either.
But do we leave it at that?
Yeah, is it made whole for my own end, or is yeah. it made whole so I can find myself in relation with my Creator?
That is a much better way of putting it.
Yeah, yeah, like that would be what I would be interested in. So then the mental health conversation is an important part, because it's an important part of our discipleship in some ways, that we go through the work of being made whole again, which is a litany of reasons, right? Like, and that's where a topic like that comes from, both the brokenness of the world, things done to us, things we've done to ourselves, like all those things that sin happens, all of, you know, death and all of its friends that wreak havoc on us, like that part of it distorts our soul in so many ways. And so Jesus is in the work of healing that. And so, yeah, I think that's the rub in this tension, right? Like, there is a sense in which, of course, Jesus does offer forgiveness, healing, wholeness, salvation. All those things aren't bad. But I think it does still beg that question of, if the only reason you're going to Jesus is for those, I still don't think we're there. I think we've missed it, you know?
Well, we treat yeah. Jesus almost like an ATM.
Yeah.
You know, like we mm-hmm. that makes us go to him when we need something, which all of us kind of can resonate. Like, sometimes, like, you're convicted about, wow, my last 10 prayers to Jesus have all been something I needed.
Yeah.
And you kind of can develop this habit of, you know, going to him just when Mm-hmm. Need something. And mm-hmm. which, you know, there's a certain amount of faith in that. And, you know, I don't think it's like evil, but I feel like yeah. you're missing out on the true beauty of Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when it comes to responding to Jesus, you gave us three ways that are practical ways that we can sort of prep ourselves to respond yeah. to beauty and yeah. to encounter beauty. Can you walk us
yeah.
through those?
Yeah. And the way I got there was just thinking through how do we get into a place like, because again, you see those indignant at the dinner and you see the woman and you see just very two different responses. So what was it about the woman that allowed her to see the beauty of Jesus mm. more clearly? And I don't think she necessarily did these three things. Maybe she did, but rather these were threes. I was just thinking of our modern world and how we're bent to really, I think we're bent to see the ugliness in the world quicker than we are to see the beauty.
Yeah.
And so therefore that distorts our view of God. We're quicker to see the ugliness rather than the beauty of God. And so the three things I just offered as like small practices to help us move in that direction. The first is curate our inputs. The second, contemplate the life of Jesus. And third, cultivate a rich life of prayer. So curating your inputs, you know, we're just bombarded with information and headlines and entertainment. And I mean, just it's staggering the amount of content we filter through just going through our daily life, whether or not you're even intentionally doing any of that, just the radio stations, the billboards, the internet streams, like all these sorts of things. And unfortunately, what the modern world has discovered is that, like, in some ways, ugliness sells quicker than beauty does. Mm. And so we're just bombarded with these visions of the world that it's a just, you know, a pit of evil that's all breaking and falling apart. And so when you constantly are taking that in, is it any wonder that that gives shape to the way we view the world? And so mm-hmm. therefore we're trained in some ways from the echo chambers that we all exist in to see the negative opposed to the beauty. To see, you know, sin's effects, but not see God at work. And so our worldview slowly gets more narrow and we tend to view just the negative. And I tried to draw a line to ensure this doesn't mean we just put our head in the sand and act like the brokenness of the world doesn't exist, but rather we have to curate those things. If we're constantly watching violence portrayed on TV, that's probably going to have a response in our souls that will bend us towards violence. We'll begin to view the world that way. And so how do we then counter that and say, what does it mean to then contemplate beauty to allow that to also kind of pervade our mind and our thinking? And so it's, you know, what would it look like for you to just take a scan of all the inputs of your life and what are the ways in which those are shaping your soul?
That would be a cool app. If you create that, like, you know how
input
like you can
scanner.
You know, you yeah. can look at your screen time at the end of the day and you're like, what?
Yeah.
4 hours. If you could just look at
your
like just if it just organized it for you, like your credit card statement. Oh, here's how much time you spent, or here's how many thoughts you spent. Yeah. Negative. Yeah. Here's what you thought. Positive. That's funny. Last night I was with my family and was talking with Olivia, and she's starting her sophomore year and I was just like, Olivia, how much of your thought would you say is like positive versus negative? Like if you're just gonna, all the thoughts that you have and all the, whatever you put into the world, and she just like, kind of like, she just stopped and like, kind of gave me that smile. Like, I'm not going to answer that question.
But and then you were like, I'll pay you $5 to answer the question.
But it's so true. And I think that we're caught off. We shouldn't be surprised by it, Kevin, like you said. But I think that somehow we still are because we view all those micro inputs.
Yeah.
The slow drip. We've sort of view them individually as if they're really not a big deal.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And we don't pay attention to the sum of it all.
Yeah.
That we are getting a micro drip of negativity or violence or whatever. There's all kinds of things, whatever you're exposing it to. And we're not paying attention. And so we kind of treat it as if it's passive. And it's really not. It's
quite formative.
Yeah. Way more actively forming in our lives than we think about it.
Yeah. And there's just a lie, I think, we believe that the world is just this dark, ugly place. And in some ways, I think the church can perpetuate that view because we view ourselves as a contrast community and one that stands in difference and towards a different end than the world. And so in some ways, I think we can perpetrate that view more than I think we should. But I just think we have to fight against that and look into the world and find the guy. I mean, this was like, do you remember in the height of the pandemic when John Krasinski came out with some good news?
Yes.
You remember that little bit he did?
Yep.
It's like that Facebook Live. It was like the most underproduced like thing in his basement. And it just exploded because it was quite literally some good news where he would just do this mock news show with good things. And it exploded. I think it was because we were just so caught in that day-to-day like flood of doom and gloom and like all of that. So then when he just responds with this little bit like, hey, this is also happening, and first responders are being taken care of by such and such through meals and this. It was like, oh yeah, there is good breaking into that. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, I think just because the way the modern digital world is organized, like we just have to remind ourselves there's beauty going on and see that beauty. And that begins to shape our heart in a way where we remember that this is God's good world, that it's his God's saturated world, that it isn't just, you know, this pit, but rather God's good creation and he created it beautiful, and there is beauty in the world. And so we have to just ensure that we're, you know, not always just taking in the wrong narrative.
Yeah.
I got to spend some time with a really successful Canadian artist who's been down here. A lot of people down here love him, named Steve Bell. And I got to hang out with him up in his hometown in Winnipeg. And I was just kind of gleaning from him how he does his artistry and how seriously he takes his work and his songwriting and that kind of stuff. And he spends a lot of time on what he calls his inputs. And he just realized really early on that if he doesn't constantly deepen the well, that he will not have anything to pull from.
Yeah.
And so he's constantly managing what his inputs are, constantly reading, constantly trying to pay attention, and also abstaining from certain things that he knows drags him to a different place.
Yeah.
It doesn't allow him to create. So
it's what's the basic the old adage, right? Like you become like what you think about. Like in so many ways that's true. Like what you give your mind's focus on, you will slowly become like.
Gushers.
And the old gusher.
But yeah, I think what we focus on really matters. Because even when you ask someone about their day, like we could talk about the good things, or like we often highlight the stories that do have more negativity or weight to them.
Yeah.
But then when someone asks a question, which to some could come across as annoying, when it's like, oh, what was good in your day? Or like, find one good thing to like celebrate. Or even how did you see God's goodness in your day today?
Yeah.
I feel like sometimes we don't often highlight the good stories or the wins.
Yeah. And that's like the two, you know, I referenced two verses in this section, you know, when Jesus is teaching on worry and anxiety, his prescription, if you will, was to go outside and look at the birds and look at the flowers, right? Like just remember the context of a larger picture. Or Paul in Philippians, that was, you know, whatever's true, whatever's noble, whatever's right, whatever's pure, whatever's lovely, whatever's admirable, think about such things. Like he's kind of pointing us in that direction of like, if we want, if our minds give so much shape to our life, then it would be, you know, it would behoove us to fill it with good, to fill it with the beauty. And then that's really what led to that second point, where it's not just like, I think it is just at some level, just the raw beauty, regardless of, you know, if it is Jesus or not. Although I think that was part of the point, was that all beauty is God's beauty in some sense, like, 'cause he's the good creator. But then like even further is like, if we're going to be prepped to respond to beauty and recognize Jesus, we need to contemplate the life of Jesus. We need to sit with Jesus. We need to get to know Jesus. We need to be familiar with who he is, how he operates and acts with people. And so in some ways, if the curating your inputs is a bit of the more weeding through, like, or kind of weighing through all the things that are coming into our life, one of the things we need to add or double down on or whatever it is just contemplating the life of Jesus. In some ways, it's the very first step of a disciple, is just to spend time and to be with Jesus. Let that become the center of our focus, because then we'll become like that which we give our mind to and our attention to. So if we give our attention to Jesus, I think we will in turn become more Christ-like. Through the work of Jesus, through the work of the Holy Spirit, through just the way that our bodies and our minds operate. So we have to contemplate the life of Jesus.
There was a quote you had that talked about the shape of Jesus's life being beautiful as well.
Yeah, yeah. That was from that article at the very beginning that I referenced by Laura. I think you say her name Serbis. She says, the beauty with which God endows creation is his own. All beautiful things share in the same way, in some way, in the beauty of God. This attribute of God is declared most perfectly in his Son, whose life and death reveal the shape of divine beauty. Mm. It's a good phrase, the shape of divine beauty. But yeah, we see that most clearly, right, in Jesus laying his life down for us. Mm-hmm. Like most of all of us would say that, what a beautiful act of love. To lay your life down for the other. And so the more that we contemplate on the very life of Jesus, of course that stirs our hearts towards him. That's the natural response of someone who sacrifices so much for you and on your behalf. We tend to, when we really get that in our bones, we tend to not think of witnessing that sacrificial act and then saying, how can I use this for my own good, right? Like usually we respond out of gratitude and saying like, and really like this woman in an act of worship, because we recognize the inherent beauty of someone who sacrifices for another.
And so the goal is to see that beauty in as many places as possible.
Yeah.
Because I get the sense that there's a lot of beauty right under our noses that we simply fail to acknowledge.
Yeah.
I know for myself, growing up in a stereotypical middle-class American household, not wanting for any basic needs, there's a sense in which a lot of the good, beautiful things in life are just taken for granted.
Yeah.
And then unless I really sit there and ponder them specifically, I never acknowledge them.
Yeah.
If you ask me, you know, what's one good thing that happened in my life, I'm not likely to say, oh, I went for a walk and saw the sunset.
Yeah.
Oh, I made myself breakfast and it was absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
I would tend to search for something that is very obviously...
Mm-hmm.
And spectacularly beautiful, like the death of Jesus, as opposed to something simple like, I woke up rested this morning.
Yeah.
It's a good point. I feel like last week I had asked my sister the same question of like, what's a way that you saw God's goodness today? And her answer made me laugh because her dog, she just moved to Mexico City and her dog was struggling in different ways. And she's like, my dog pooped today. I'm like, is that your answer?
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah, God's caring for me and showing me his care by caring for my animal as well. And it's like, there's little things that I think we can just celebrate too, where we don't have to search for these like big words or big stories or big testimonies, but it's the little details too. Maybe not the best example, but I mean, it's the little things.
Then the third one is cultivate a rich life of prayer. And this, what I was trying to get at this is moving it from just the inanimate beauty of just like a beautiful picture, a beautiful film, whatever it is, like, which is in fact a beautiful thing. But the distinction with the way we see Jesus as beautiful is we actually get to engage with Jesus. There's a relational, personal dimension in which we can actually encounter the very person of Jesus, and do so with our own real life. Like we can in fact bring our life to Jesus, the ugliness in our own self, the ugliness in the world that we experience. We can bring that to Jesus. And so as you cultivate a conversational kind of relational, interactive relationship with Jesus, I think you become more attuned to the beauty of Jesus, because you recognize he's drawing closer to you as you're drawing closer to him. And so there's becomes this life of interconnectedness with Jesus. And it happens through prayer. And my hope was again, to not make it one in which we can overthink, at least I can overthink prayer. I can make it way harder than it needs to be, opposed to just turning our mind and our attention to God throughout our day in subtle, small ways. We bring our heart before the Lord.
Kev, when you had me preach a few months ago, I'm thinking about the last two, the contemplate the life of Jesus and cultivate a rich life of prayer. Like when you prepare a message, you kind of have to do both of those.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like you have to spend time like studying who he is and studying what the scriptures say he is and all that kind of stuff. And when you really like, when I encountered Jesus in that prep, it really is the treasure that you didn't know you were always looking for.
Mm.
because all this stuff that we spend our lives chasing, even the beauty of this world, like, it's just a reflection of the beauty of him.
Yeah.
And when you do really encounter Jesus, and I did, man, I'm like, it put me on the floor for a while. Like, there's nothing like it. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely how we were designed to live in communion with God. And it's just, so really looking at this, that all beauty is God's beauty. Really, we're left with this idea that you said that beauty ultimately is designed to bring us back to him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have anything to say about that?
It's pretty well said.
All right.